Current Affairs. Good evening, listeners. Welcome to Akashvani's Current Affairs program. I am Anubha Rohatgi, and today we will discuss India's maritime diplomacy for energy security amid the West Asia crisis. We have with us international affairs expert Professor Rahul Mishra and economic analyst Shubhmoy Bhattacharji. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
The conflict in West Asia involving the US, Israel and Iran has been raging for a month now, pushing up energy prices and creating supply chain disruptions. India, which imports about 85 to 90% of its crude oil requirement through imports, has ramped up efforts to secure its energy needs through various means, including diversifying the import basket and maritime diplomacy. Professor Mishra, I'll start with you. The bulk of India's crude oil imports comes from West Asia, which is embroiled right now in a conflict. So this has obviously, like I said, pushed up the price of the Indian crude oil basket drastically. So along with diversifying its import options, how crucial is it for New Delhi to navigate this crisis through diplomatic means?
I think India has been very clear from the start that diplomacy and dialogue are the ways to not only resolve the conflict amongst the parties that are directly involved, but also countries that have huge stakes in the region. So keeping that in mind, India has been saying that perhaps both the sides should come to the negotiating table and resolve the conflict, while also insisting on the fact that there are countries, there are regions across the world that are dependent on gas and oil supplies that come from this part of the world, that is through the Strait of Hormuz, but also from wider Gulf and the Arab world. And therefore, India's belief is that the conflict should resolve. If not resolve, de-escalation is the first step, and then perhaps negotiations and bringing normalcy back in the region is something that must be considered by all the parties. So far as India's own efforts are concerned, India's approach has been based on three principles. First, secure your people, secure your energy supplies, and see to it that the damage done to India's own demands, India's own energy requirements is minimal. Right. That's number one. Second is to also make sure that those who are your people who are working there, Indian expats and diaspora, NRIs who are working in the Gulf and the wider Arab world are brought back home, are evacuated safely, and India has been seeking the support of Gulf countries, particularly Iran in this context. Right. And Iran has been very supportive. So India's diplomacy has been quite effective in that sense. The third is India has also been, right from the start, been open to this idea that it has to talk to all the parties concerned. Right. And India has been engaging all these countries. Prime Minister Modi has spoken to almost all the leaders from the region. And also Dr. Jaishankar, the foreign minister, has spoken to leadership, different levels in Iran and other countries. So India's diplomacy is to keep the channels of dialogue open, understand what is happening there, secure its own interests without getting involved in the conflict.
Mr. Bhattacharji, how has the conflict reshaped India's maritime energy strategy?
We had always believed in a free and open ocean, the freedom of navigation. That is the basis on which India had been using the trade routes and had been encouraging others. What has now happened is that the critical points from the places in West Asia where oil and gas would come, all these places have become so disturbed that principled position is not really enough. It's necessary, but it's not enough. So what's happened is India has developed, therefore, the Operation Urja Suraksha, where India is basically sending its navy not to engage in an offensive position, but to give the sense of security to India-flagged vessels, bringing in oil, bringing in gas, bringing in LPG from the Strait of Hormuz, even from the Red Sea, the Bab el-Mandab, and all those places, to the Indian ports with the sense of security that they need. That if there is any risk of untoward incident, those will not happen. So that has been a very major, what I should call a force multiplier, that India has started to deploy in this region. It is exactly in tune with what India wants. It is also exactly proportionate and sufficient as of now to ensure that these ships could come calling. In fact, that is what is underpinning the fact that India has been able to ensure that the oil and gas consignments keep on reaching the shores of India.
Professor Mishra, Mr. Bhattacharya just mentioned the Operation Urja Suraksha. So if diplomacy provides us with flexibility, you know, to ensure that our energy security needs are met, naval capability provides a credibility too. So how is the Navy ensuring that the smooth movement of India-bound cargo ships in the Strait of Hormuz and beyond it?
Well, the Indian Navy's current operation, Operation Urja Suraksha, has two principal objectives. One, to first make sure that all those ships that have the Indian flag that are carrying energy supplies for Indian consumption are escorted, they are given route-specific directions, and they are also safeguarded from any untoward incident. Right, so this is to give a navigational support, route-specific guidance, and also to support, to basically escort these ships. Because now, as this crisis escalates, as the conflict escalates and enters its fourth week, the chances are that there will be attacks by non-traditional security actors, that is pirates. It could be those who would just try and hijack a ship. These are major challenges. Also, to give a very clear signal to the Iranian naval authorities, naval officers, and those who are deployed there, to other countries, that these are the ships. For instance, there's been a number of ships that are escorted. These ships are Indian, and therefore their security is important. So it is first a display of India's naval capabilities. Second, to safeguard our interests, safeguard our ships coming in from that region. And in addition to this, also to showcase that India is a security provider in the Indian, wider Indian Ocean region. And when it comes to India's own energy security, it will do what is necessary without getting into a conflict, display its naval capabilities, secure its interests.
Professor Mishra, India has had strong relations with the nations in West Asia, even when those countries are competing regional powers. So what role has New Delhi's policy of multi-alignment played in helping it secure the passage of its energy carriers through the crucial Strait of Hormuz, even during this period of heightened maritime tension? What has worked in New Delhi's favor?
Look, India's traditional approach of bringing together the countries of Global South, the voices of Global South, yes, or BRICS, being the leader of Global South, being an anchor of Global South countries, the small, medium powers, and also rising powers, is something that has worked to India's advantage. So far as multi-alignment is concerned, it is a tool at the hand of Indian policy makers. And multi-alignment policy has worked in the sense that India's been open to discussing and deliberating upon issues that concern this conflict, but also wider situation in the region, and has been on the same page with countries of the region. So multi-alignment essentially means that you are not aligned to one superpower or the other, one party in the conflict or the other, but you're open to all. I think that is a very good, effective policy tool. But India's wider agenda of bringing countries of the Global South together, developing countries together, understand their concerns without getting into any of the alliance mechanisms that exist today or that have existed in the past, has worked in India's favor. India's long-standing history of not being involved in a conflict, not being a part of any major military bloc, has worked to its advantage. Over past seven decades, we have seen that India-Iran relationship has already been one that has been time-tested and that has a lot of trust in it. With Israel, past 30 years, since 1992, things have unfolded to such a scale that India and Israel can call each other trusted partners and brothers. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is called Prime Minister Modi, his brother. So this relationship has evolved and developed on an even keel. It has nothing to do with what is happening between Israel and Iran. So India has managed to develop its relationships without getting into the intra-regional dynamics of Middle East or West Asia, if you will, has worked to its advantage.
Mr. Bhattacharya, how significant is this, if I may call it a diplomatic victory, for India to be among a handful of nations on Iran's list of friendly countries that Iran is allowing the ships to pass through the Strait of Hormuz, not just diplomatically, but from also an economic point of view?
One of the things that we should be very clear is that we don't depend on handouts. Now, this is something which has to be understood very well. Compared to the position of the oil shocks of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, where India was a marginal player in the global oil politics, India stands firmly in the middle. Why so? Because India is the third largest purchaser of fossil fuels in the world. There's no other economy other than China and Japan, which demand so much of oil and gas. And who are the people who will be selling to this oil and gas to? Basically, these are the countries in West Asia. And even as you saw in India's relationships with USA, the USA is also very keen to muscle in into this market. So India plays from a position of strength. Naturally, in this crisis, while the countries are fighting with each other, and India has no relation, has nothing to play with that, wisely so. India, however, is the place where all of these countries would want to sell their products. After the destruction of this that has been wrought by this war, each of these countries, remember their major sales is of oil and gas. Each of the countries of West Asia, they depend only on the sale of oil and gas. And if that sales get hurt, these countries get hurt big time. And who is the buyer of this oil and gas? India. So for them to ensure that India continues to receive consignments is not a question of being understanding or trying to accommodate India, but rather safeguard their vital interests. If they cannot afford to do so, then India will rightly turn around to say that I don't bother. You couldn't supply me when I needed. And Indian economy, as you have seen from today's statements and today's decision by the government of India, then India has no plans to cut down on its consumption of oil and gas. Very wisely so, because the energy consumption is the bedrock on which the economy is growing. So, therefore, whoever supplies is not doing us any benefit or any sort of contribution. They are securing the market, which is why even Iran is very keen that whatever happens, the Indian market should not be disturbed. So they are not doing us a favor. India is doing a favor to them by allowing whichever ships from whichever country it comes along. What we are doing is from the Ujja Suraksha is that to any mischief that could happen to the Indian flotilla of oil and gas, that shouldn't happen. And that is what the Navy is protecting this.
So, Mr. Bhattacharya, you are saying that, in fact, it is the countries in West Asia that are safeguarding their interests. They are not doing us any favor. But the fact of the matter is also that Indian economy is significantly exposed to the macroeconomic risks.
This is not a risk. Japan imports 90%, okay, even more.
Right.
And the Japanese economy does very well. The Indian economy is structured to import. Mm-hmm. And that is something that we do. We don't take it as a handout from any country.
Okay.
We import it because we can afford to. Indian economy now has the heft and the power to import in that condition. And that's fine. And India is therefore, whatever the price, you know, in earlier periods when prices shot through the roof, India had to curtail buying of oil and gas. What happens is a fiscal adjustment that the Indian economy will do. It's more than the risk. That is what is ensuring that the Indian economy is firing on all cylinders, which will be of tremendous help when the war subsides, when the financial investors across the world will want to get markets to invest in. They'll find the Indian economy is a very powerful place to invest in.
All right.
So that's how it works.
So, Professor Mishra, as Mr. Bhattacharya was saying, that India is, in a position to import and pay for whatever the oil prices are. But at the same time, we are also diversifying our import basket. As Prime Minister Modi told the Parliament earlier this week, that the government has taken steps over the past decade to diversify energy imports and reduce vulnerability to global disruptions. And from the earlier 27 countries, India now imports energy from 41 nations. So apart from securing our energy needs, this diversification, in diplomatic terms, what does it mean? And how would it benefit India?
Well, first of all, if a rising power like India wants to diversify its energy supplies and is successful in doing that, as you mentioned, 40 plus countries, I think first it reveals the strong diplomatic footprints that India has in these countries, the strong ties that India has built over past several decades, particularly past 10 years. Indian foreign policy moves in regions across the world have also been driven by energy security requirements. Whether it is Southeast Asia or it is Latin America, the African countries, Indian Ocean region, Australia and the South Pacific, all these regions, our diplomacy has been driven by energy interests as well. And that is now paying off. So this diversification in the long run is a very good strategy. While India has maintained that it will keep on buying oil and gas from the Gulf and the Arab countries, diversifying is a good policy option. And I think this will benefit India in the long run. Tomorrow, if the conflict escalates or another round of conflict happens, India will be in a much safer position. So these anxieties that come from some quarters in the Indian consumer sector and Indian economy will also be something that we don't have to worry about next time around.
Mr. Bhattacharjee, we have seen that India is at present over-reliant on maritime routes such as the Strait of Hormuz for energy security. So what are the other alternatives that are available to India, or the alternatives that India can work on moving forward?
I mean, what you pointed out rightly was the fact that it has to be, oil has to be imported from all countries wherever there's oil, and whenever, if they can afford to sell, and if they can afford to sell at a competitive price, we are happy to be buying those, which is exactly what India does. India has raised its number of people, countries from which it buys from 23 to about 40 over the past few years. And that works well for us. Also, the big thing that has to be looked at is that no matter whatever we do, the countries on the Strait of Hormuz or the countries around the Red Sea, which is the other side of the channel, essentially are the places from where the bulk of the fossil fuels come. LPG, for instance, overwhelming percentage of that LPG is produced in Saudi Arabia, the propane-butane mix, which is necessary. Similarly, LNG largely comes from Qatar and from Iran. So if Iran manages to get out of the sanctions and is able to sell, good for India. If Qatar obviously has declared force majeure, so that means there's production will be hampered for some years. So these are the decisions which would be continuously be kept on taken. But as I said, that ensuring security does not mean going around with that we need, and so therefore can anybody supply. It's about playing from a position of strength. And essentially that means that, as I say, that even USA would want to sell oil to India. And as of now, though, some of that is coming through the Cape of Good Hope, that South African turn. But one would expect that as the conditions become a bit more stable, as you know, during the earlier periods when trade used to boom across the Indian Ocean through, and I'm talking about centuries ago, that it was the responsibility of the kings to ensure that the trade routes were not molested, that the ship could travel well. The same principle applies today also. It's about, and that's why what India is demonstrating, that it's saying that, look, whenever our ships with Indian flags, and it actually gives an advantage, because when ships find that if they use the Indian flag, they can fly safely, they can sail safely, they can get better insurance, they can get insurance cover. So it actually also tallies with India's point of view that let's have more ships with Indian flags. And that gives you the safety to travel to India or travel out of India and be able to do business robustly. So, all these things sort of add up.
Professor Mishra, India's approach in dealing with the present West Asia crisis shows that it has so far successfully balanced naval assertiveness with diplomatic flexibility and economic diversification. What is your view on this?
Well, I think India has done pretty well in terms of its diplomatic engagements and safeguarding its interests. With Operation Urja Suraksha, I think India has also displayed its naval capabilities, that it can safeguard its interest when it comes to the high seas and international waters. And this flexibility in dealing with the parties in conflict and also with the wider region clearly showcases India's efficacy of its diplomacy and its foreign policy. It's using naval forces to secure its interests. So overall, I think India has done quite well in dealing with the crisis, protecting its interests. And that's what a country that is not a direct party to the conflict should do.
Mr. Bhattacharjee, as India shifts towards renewable energy, and not just because of this crisis, the government has been focusing, on India moving towards renewable energy. How will maritime diplomacy evolve?
Well, it's securing the energy basket for a country when it's expanding, when an economy is expanding and expanding at the scale at which India is doing, is a very challenging task, not just because India imports or anything, but that always becomes a very difficult and something which policymakers have to be always at it. So it's a healthy situation to be in, that there are challenges for energy, there are opportunities that therefore throw up, and therefore the ways that those can be solved. For instance, electricity. We have solved it to a large extent by ensuring that there's spare capacity in the grid. We are also going even better by ensuring that about 50% of that grid becomes renewable energy based.
Right.
Now, all of these are strategies which look not just at 1 or 2 years ahead, but strategies which looked at 10, 20 years ahead, even more. And that is how these things pan out. Energy decisions for today, today is, of course, what is happening in the war is a very short-term thing. But energy strategies are not formulated or with a horizon of, say, 4 years or 5 years. They are like looked at like a 15 to 20 year time frame. And India, the energy policy, which has been released by Niti Aayog, exactly makes it clear, for instance, that by 2050, India will still be doing a large amount of coal mining, which is very necessary. And then after that, that coal use will taper off. But that's exactly as part of India's net zero commitment. That is what India will be doing. So, you know, these are the sort of decisions which are and strategies and based on which effective policies are made on which the country runs. For instance, look at what India has done. India is the only South Asian country which does not use oil to finance its electricity. All our neighbors use oil to run their electric plants. India, there's not a single plant in India which uses oil to make electricity. And not only that, India has also shifted electricity. I mean, India has moved its entire transport network of trains onto electric lines. And that is a very far-sighted policy, which is actually helping us a lot to ensure that our train network is not affected by the current crisis.
Professor Mishra, how do you see the India's maritime diplomacy evolving, moving ahead, moving beyond this crisis?
Well, as the Indian economy is rapidly growing, with the rapidly growing Indian economy and very swiftly growing consumption, India's ambitions to become a semiconductor hub and artificial intelligence and new critical technologies, to become a developed country, Viksit Bharat 2047, India's maritime diplomacy and India's naval capabilities have to also grow in accordance with these objectives. So there must come a time when India showcases its blue water naval capabilities and a robust one to not only safeguard its interests, but also the interest of small island countries of the Indian Ocean region, perhaps the wider Indo-Pacific. Mm-hmm. That is the goal that has to be kept in mind while assessing India's maritime diplomacy, naval capabilities, and plans for next 2 to 3 decades moving forward.
Mr. Bhattacharjee, earlier in the program, you mentioned the India-Middle East-Europe Economic Corridor, or the IMEC. So if we look at the present context and taking from there, what role can such pacts as the IMEC play in diversifying connectivity for us so that, you know, our energy security is not at stake?
Energy security is not at stake, not because of what we are doing, but because of what others
exactly.
do. So we are not in trouble in terms of having new and further routes being taken on. In fact, for instance, you can expect that if there's a ceasefire at some level, then one of the routes that we are talking about is not just IMEC, but also the INSTC, India North-South Trade Corridor, yeah. International North-South Trade Corridor, that India has been spearheading, and that goes through Iran and right up to Caspian Sea and off border and into Russia and Europe. Now, these are the sort of things that India would be, and India has been pushing for, and they make sense. The India-Middle East-European corridor is also one of those structures which India has been pushing. Again, as you would notice, that these are long-term plans. So as part of the long-term plans, the eastern part of that corridor has already become operational, the corridor between India and the United Arab Emirates. The next part of it, which is the train corridor between UAE and Saudi Arabia, and then going on further towards Haifa in Israel. Now, those are the sort of things that those countries have to now will realize that there's a very important and very necessary steps to ensure that they do not get stuck by over-reliance on the sea route. India has been pushing for the fact that this sort of a corridor would have been tremendously useful. For instance, if that sort of a corridor, the train link, had been made operational, then it would have really helped those countries to ensure that they could supply their energy commodities to that train link on almost to the border of the Strait of Hormuz, and from where India would have taken on the cargo and transported it to the Indian seas, to the Indian ports. So these are showing and proving the value of those foresight, and hopefully it will be something which these countries will be now be much more keen to work on to ensure that they get, that they do not put all their eggs in one basket and get shafted when this sort of a situation occurs.
Professor Mishra, the present West Asia conflict, so taking that as the, you know, ground, taking that as the baseline, what are the challenges for India in navigating the maritime space in future, and what are the lessons to be learned for it from the diplomatic point of view?
Well, there are a number of lessons that India has to learn. One is that this conflict has not been confined to the region, West Asian mm-hmm. region alone. The Iranian ballistic missile attacks on Diego Garcia has opened up this new challenge for India and the maritime powers in the Indian Ocean region. It has exposed Indian Ocean region to these extra-regional threats. Tomorrow, if this kind of conflict escalates, then today it is Diego Garcia, tomorrow it could be Mauritius or Maldives. So how India as a net security provider could help these countries and safeguard the Indian Ocean region? In the past, India has been a supporter, and along with Sri Lanka, a proponent of Indian Ocean as a zone of peace. Yeah. But that idea does not exist today, but the Indian Ocean region has for a long time been a very peaceful one. So to secure the region as a free and open, conflict-free region, it is very important for Indian Navy to have its presence across the region, across these waters. Indian maritime diplomacy and Indian naval diplomacy, which already includes, you know, joint exercises and training of personnel, it also includes PASEX exercises. These could be elevated further to deal with challenges that are known to us with the Iranian attack on Diego Garcia, but also the unknown challenges. Today, it is a conflict that does not directly involve us, other than our security and people's interests. But tomorrow it could be China or some other country that has vested interest in taking control of the Indian Ocean and taking it away from Indian friendly influence. So if China or Pakistan come up with this kind of approach of interfering in the Indian Ocean region, then it would be a direct challenge to India. It would be a direct threat to countries of the region, including these small and vulnerable states of the Indian Ocean.
Mr. Bhattacharjee, from an economic point of view, India is one of the world's fastest growing economies. So the present crisis, what does it tell us about, and how would you assess India's maritime diplomacy in dealing with this present crisis? And as I asked Professor Mishra also, what are the lessons for us moving ahead?
In the 20th century, the big powers of the world learned that maritime diplomacy is very important, principally for one reason: to ensure that energy supplies remain safe and reliable. As economies like Germany, UK, USA and others expanded, they realized that they have to keep an enormous amount of firepower ready in their maritime capacity to be able to safeguard their energy interests. Japan and later Russia also learned the same lesson. It is not surprising, because energy is always a very contested element. Whether even if forget about oil, look at what's happening about critical minerals. Look at what is happening about the renewable power. All of these are contested. Energy is never a very peaceful product to exchange. It is something which countries always fight for in the global order. Given that sort of a thing, whenever it is transported across the seas, therefore having the maritime power, the maritime diplomacy, or the maritime ability is a very vital part of that country's ability to protect its energy corridors. India has sharply realized this sort of a thing. In fact, it has been developing its capacity with what is called the Blue Water Navy. And there are lots of other things that are being attached to it. We are also talking about, for instance, in energy security, there is another sort of energy security. We have got a lot of these pipelines which are being planned between undersea. Now, those pipelines, to be able to stay secure, as we saw in North Sea, where there was disruptions on those pipelines, so those disruptions do not happen, one would need maritime security ability. There are lots more. For instance, there will be undersea cables that would be bringing in telecommunications connect. And those are, again, vital, what I should call, choke points, which can happen. And those, again, need to be protected. India is a large place center for those pipelines, for those undersea cables to come and land up on the Indian continent. Our internet connectivity and everything depends on those. So all of these means that the country has to be sure that it brings its ability to safeguard these interests. And that is how, and that is where the energy diplomacy gets allied with maritime diplomacy.
Professor Rahul Mishra, Mr. Shubman Bhattacharjee, thank you so much for joining us on Akashvani's Current Affairs program.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, you can also listen to this program on our mobile app, News on AIR, and YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. Current Affairs.